Hello everyone. Today I'm going to talk about some interesting security issues related to integer arrows. So what is an integer arrow? So mathematically, if you multiply 2 to 30 by 2 to 3, and you are expecting 2 to 33, but actually because machine integers are limited, so the highest bits are shifted out, so what you actually get is 0. So this could lead to a bunch of vulnerabilities. So I'm going to show you two examples here. So first example is integer overflow actually leads to buffer overflow. So a frequently used pattern is this malloc n times size. So basically, you're trying to malloc n entries. Each entry is of size. And if programmers forgot to check for multiplication overflow, then actually the occurring size could wrap around to 0. And that means the buffer is actually smaller than the program expected. So when programmers further write to the buffer, and that leads to buffer flow, and more seriously, it could lead to a privilege escalation. So one famous example is this iPhone jailbreak. A second example is not about buffer flow, but logical bugs. So one example is in a Linux out-of-memory killer. So basically, what it does is it computes a score for each process, and then it kills the process with a high score when the whole system is running out of memory. So the out-of-memory killer computes a score like this. Basically, it multiplies the number of pages the process consumes by 1,000, and then divided by the number of total memory pages in the whole system. The problem is when this multiplication overflows, actually a malicious process which consumes a lot of memory actually only gets a very low score. And that means the process could somehow trick the kernel into killing innocent processes. So, integer arrows actually now is an emerging threat. According to an earlier study from 2007, the integer arrows now is number two over all OS adversaries. We also did a survey earlier last year, and we found out that over one-third of the serious bugs are actually integer arrows. So here by serious, we mean those can corrupt the Linux kernel. So how do we prevent them? So I'll talk about a few existing techniques. So one, a natural choice is about using arbitrary precision integers like we have done in Python or Ruby. So basically, those integers are the same as math integers. You don't worry about overflow at all. And one problem is like performance, because they require dynamic storage, and you don't want to use them when you are writing a new kernel. Another issue is they also, because they're often implemented in C, and they also have overflows themselves. A second choice is to trap on every such overflow. The problem is it has some false positives. A lot of overflow checks themselves actually depend on overflow. If you actually trap on every overflow, and the Linux kernel actually couldn't boot up at all. A third approach is to use some memory-safe language, such as C# or Java. So in this case, you don't have memory overflows. But first, you have to pay some price of performance. And second, they're actually not enough, because they cannot really cover like the logical bugs I have shown before. So in this talk, I'll present a case study of 114 bugs in Linux kernel, which is a popular operating system. And I'll talk about the static analysis tool called kint, and we use this static analysis tool to find the 114 bugs. Then I'll talk about two mitigation strategies. One is a very simple safe allocator called kmalloc array, and the second is a new integer abstraction called nan integer. So let's get into the case study. We applied our tool kint to a source code the Linux kernel from last November to this April, and we periodically reviewed the bug reports and reported bug and submitted patches to the Linux kernel developers. And all those 114 bugs were confirmed by the Linux kernel developers. Of them, 105 were exclusively found by us, and 9 of them were found by other developers at the same time. I want to note that this case study is incomplete. There are there could be many more bugs in the bug report, it's just we don't have time and power to inspect every bug report. So from this case study, I want to show you two interesting findings. The first one is that most of these bugs would cause either buffer overflow or logical bugs, so they're sort of serious. You can see like 40%, they take around like 80% of those bugs. A second finding is that actually two-thirds of those bugs have checks. So that means the programs knew there could be something wrong, and they wrote some checks, but those checks were still wrong. So that means the writing correct checks actually is non-trivial. So I'll show you two examples here. So the first example is from the network module. So you can see basically the cost data structure. It's a table, flow table. And it contains a bunch of entries. So you can see the layout is showing on the right-hand side. So the code basically reads integer m from user space. And because it's untrusted, so the code checks if n is too large. If it's larger than 2 to 30, then the code rejects this value. Then the code uses n to allocate memory. So you can see the memory is basically the size of this float table and also n entries. And after allocation, each entry is like 8 bytes here. After allocation, the code initialized each entry using this loop. So that's all. So the program knew there could be overflow, so they checked for it. But this actually is not correct. So let's see, the code actually permits n to be as large as 2 to 30. As we have mentioned before, 2 to 30 times 8 actually gives you 0. So that means there is no space allocated for those entries at all. So that means any write to this entries actually leads to buffer overflows. So I'll show you another example in the VMware graphics driver. So basically, the code reads two 32-bit integers from user space, height and pitch. So because they're untrusted, so the code performs some checks. So the first patch actually adds a check. You can see if their product is larger than some limit, so the code rejects it. So this fix is incorrect because both values could be very large 32-bit values, and the multiplication overflows. So the developers actually went to fix it. So they use a 64-bit integer to hold the value. Unfortunately, according to C standard, this multiplication is still 32-bit. So this actually fixes nothing. So a correct fix should be converting those values into 64-bit first before the multiplication. So to sum up, actually writing correct checks is non-trivial. Like two-thirds of those checks were incorrect. And it's worth noting that one of those checks, actually, it's a very simple single line check. There's nothing tricky here, but still they made three mistakes just in one line. And I also want to note that among those bugs, and there are two CVE cases. So those CVE cases were reviewed by security experts extensively, but still they were fixed incorrectly. So given the situation, how can we actually find those bugs and fix them? So the traditional way of finding and fixing bugs is to ask programs to write tests. But here it's hard because integer errors are often triggered by corner case input, and the programs didn't know what could trigger those bugs in the first place. So one popular technique is symbolic execution. So basically, those tools would represent each variable using a symbolic value, and they have a much better coverage. The problem is when applying those tools to an entire new kernel, you would run into path explosion problem. And also, you have to model like hardware devices and every like environment settings, which is hard. So in the rest of the talk, I'll talk about our tool, a static analysis tool called kint. So here is an overview of how it works. So it starts from LMIR, the intermediate representation, which is compiled from C source code. And then the first component of kint is to analyze each function individually. So basically, it looks only at one single function for bugs. And in this case, it could have more bugs. It could have some false positives because it doesn't consider procedural problems. So to reduce the false positives, we introduce a second component, a range analysis. And in this case, sometimes users only want to focus on exploit bugs. So want to label some interesting cases they only care about. So we introduce a third component called a taint analysis. So this one basically looks for whatever the user annotated. And LastPass basically combines all the inputs from the three components and generates a bug report. So now I'll talk those components. So the first component is per function analysis. So I'll use a simplified version of the previous example to demonstrate how it works. So here we see like there's a function called foo. It has a parameter called n. And the code checks if n is greater than 230. And then it performs a multiplication, n times 8, and use the result as a allocation size. So we want to check if this n times 8 actually overflows. So it actually, the k-int looks for two conditions. The first condition is overflow condition. Basically means under what condition would this multiplication overflow? So here is simple. And if n is too large, then it overflows. So here specifically, the bound here is the maximum value of this integer divided by 8. The second condition k-int looks for is under what condition will this multiplication instruction execute? So here, if you really want to reach this multiplication, you have to bypass all checks. So here, there's only one if check, like n is greater than 230. So that means n should be smaller or equal to like 230. So here, we have this path condition, that n is smaller or equal than 230. So when k-int has both conditions, k-int will combine them into a symbolic query. So here, you can see the query is basically just like a logical AND of both conditions. And then k-int consults a constraint solver, and the solver will reply, oh yes, this is possible. For example, when n is 230, then both conditions could be satisfied. And k-int, in this case, will report a bug. So you can see here k-int basically only examines one single function. So there could be like constraints across functions. So I'll talk about the second component, a range analysis, basically performs a whole program analysis. So let's see, we're still using this running example, but here the program actually is very careful. So the programmer writes this every time the program calls this foo, it checks if n is actually between 0 and 100. So actually this one is fine because n is only within this range and n times 8 will not overflow at all. So let's see how k-int works here. So the goal is to reduce false positives due to those cross-function constraints. And also, we want to scale the tool to a large program, especially for those that has a lot of functions. So here, we don't use symbolic values like we used before, but we just use two very simple constant integers, like 0 and 100 for each variable in this program. And k-int propagates this ranges and iteratively like refine the ranges and then feedback this range information back to the server. And now let's talk about the third component. It's how basically you want to focus on exploitable bugs. So here, users have to provide some annotations to tell k-int what are interesting cases. So this path is optional. So if you don't provide annotations, then k-int just report more bug reports. The first annotation we support is untrusted input. For example, if you annotate copy from user as untrusted input, then k-int will propagate this untrusted bit, just performs a standard taint analysis and mark every overflow result that is derived from untrusted input. A second annotation we support is sensitive sinks, for example, k-malloc size. So if you care about allocation size, you can mark this, and then k-int will report, will label those overflow results used as allocation sizes. In current implementation, k-int uses ALVM compiler framework, and it also uses BoLector constraint solver. So I'll show you a simple usage here. Basically, under your project directory, you want to do make CC to k-int GCC. It's a wrapper we provide. Basically, what it does is invokes GCC and also generates a bunch of LLVM IR files. And then you run this range and tent analysis script on all the LMIR files. And then you perform a checker, invoke this checker to generate a bug report. So here is one example of the bug report. You can see basically this report says there is an unsigned multiplication overflow. It's 32 bits. And the file location is in this XFS echo.c. And this line number is column number. And the result is derived from some untrusted input. And also, it's used in some sensitive things, like allocation size. OK. So I'll show you some evaluation results. Basically, I'll talk about how effective KNT is in finding new bugs, about false positives, like false negatives, like what KNT will miss, and the false positives, like what those not real bugs KNT will report, and also attempt to analyze the entire kernel. I have shown you like 114 bugs in the Linux kernel, and they were all found using KInt. We also applied KInt to user space programs, OpenSSH and Netty web server, and also we found bugs in those programs. So it shows that KInt is effective in finding new bugs. Second is that you can see KInt to show like KInt finds some. What will KInt miss? So we use like CVE cases from past 3 years. So we connected 37 CVE cases, and we excluded those found by KInt for fairness. So in this case, you can see that KInt can find KInt will miss only one of them. It's because of loops. KInt currently only handles loops by unrolling them. So KInt cannot catch bugs caused by loops. Now let's get into false positives. So we also reused the 37 cases before, but this time we use patched code. So the assumption here is the patched code is correct. So if KInt reports nothing, then it's probably good. And the result is that KInt has one false positives, and it also actually found two CVE cases were fixed incorrectly, as I shown mentioned before, so it shows that KInt is useful for validating patches. We also applied KInt to the entire Linux kernel. This time, we used KInt as 3.4, and we did this check in April this year. And this time, KInt reported a large number of possible bug reports, and we are only focused on like those we think like interesting bugs. So here it's basically the values are derived from untrusted inputs, and those are used as allocation sizes. So there are like over 700 of them. We quickly looked at these bugs for 5 hours, and we found 11 real bugs. And for the rest of the bugs, basically we don't know. We don't have manpower or time to look at every bug report. To analyze the entire kernel, KInt takes 3 hours. So with in a 6-core CPU machine, so basically we feel like this is it's practical to use KInt in daily development. So to sum up, KInt finds over 100 bugs in real world system, including the Linux kernel and some user space programs. And there could be many more out there, so that's one limitation here. Like, we just don't know whether the rest of the bug reports are real or not. So the question now is, can we actually help programmers? Can we prevent this in the future? So here's one simple strategy for a very special case, allocation sizes. So this happens a lot. It's frequently seen in the kernel or even in some user space programs. Basically, you want it to multiply n by size to allocate the memory, and if you forget to check the multiplication overflow, or if you do it in the wrong way, then there could be buffer overflows. So we are contributing this new function called kmalloc array into a Linux kernel. So basically, this function returns a new pointer if this multiplication overflows. So this is a very simple refinement, and you can use them since Linux kernel 3.4. So we also propose a more generalized abstraction. I would call it a NaN integer. So the rules for NaN integer is very simple. So basically, first we reserve basically a special NaN value, and any overflow results in NaN value. And if any of the operands is NaN, then also result is NaN value. So the rules are simple. And if you really want to check if any overflow happened, so you can just check for the final results. And we have implemented this in the client's compiler by modifying it. And the performance is very good. It has very, very small overhead because it's basically on x86, it just inserts a few checks on the flag register. So I'll show you one example, like how to use this NaN integer. As you can see, this code is from the Linux perf tool. The code is very nasty. Actually, I try to simplify it, but you can still see those verbose manual checks. And when the programmers found they knew like there were overflow bugs, so they tried to fix it, but they still made three mistakes when they were trying to fix it. So I'll show you like how to use NaN integer to simplify the code. So first, no one wants to write overflow checks, so let's get rid of them and make our program shorter. And then, of course, you want to add a keyword NaN here to declare those integers as NaN integer. And here, you also need to change malloc here. So basically, the new malloc function basically takes a NaN integer as allocation size. And if the allocation size overflowed in the past, it returns a new pointer. Otherwise, it just invokes a standard libc allocator. So to conclude, I have shown you a case study of 114 bugs in the Linux kernel. And you can see writing those checks actually is non-trivial. And I have presented you a static NAS tool called kint. And we use them to find a lot of bugs. And it's useful and practical. And I've showed like two mitigation strategies. One is a simple allocator called a key malloc array, and a more generalized abstraction called NaN integer. And we'll try to release the code very soon. So check it back. And from now, you have already used a key malloc array if you are developing for the Linux kernel. Thank you.
Hi, hello. Jack from Harvey Mail College here. Have you checked the source code of kint using kint?
It's because kint is implemented using C++, and kint only supports C itself. So we did it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But actually, I feel like we could make mistakes. From now on, I don't know how to write C programs after this project. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tim from UC San Diego, and I'm kind of very nice talk, and I want to know how many annotations you used when you are checking this Linux kernel using kint. So the basic question is, I am the test engineers, right? And I want to make the testing more targeted and more efficient. So what kind of thing should I annotate in my program?
Okay, the question was annotation effort when analyzing the entire Linux kernel. So that's a very good question. In the paper, we have more details. Basically, we used 40 annotations for untrusted input and 20 annotations for allocation sizes. So that's 60 in total. So basically, if you want to apply kint to your own program, and you can't annotate nothing, that means you have a lot of false positives or something you don't know. And so if you annotate more, then you have fewer false positives. Thanks.
Hi, Matthew Fernandez from NICTA and UNSW. Adding this not a number concept, you're not writing C anymore, you're extending C and changing the semantics of it. If you're going to go to that extent, why not just change the semantics of addition and multiplication and operations so they don't overflow?
Sorry, I don't quite understand.
So you're changing the semantics of how these operations work now.
The question is, what semantics does actually kint use? How different is from the standard C semantics? For part of our semantics, for example, for those undefined behavior thing, basically, our definition is the same as the C standard. For unsigned operations, basically, C standard permits signed integer overflows. That's fairly standard and fine, well-defined in the C standard, but kint doesn't allow it, because in a lot of cases, at least in the Linux kernel or in the allocation sizes cases, unsigned inch overflow is a very bad thing. It causes a lot of bugs. But yes, I agree with you. Like, for example, in the crypto code, you basically rely on modular semantics. And in those cases, our tool would have a lot of false positives because the programs rely on the C standards wraparound semantics.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Arjun Roy, UC San Diego. I was wondering if you could go into a little bit more detail on, I guess, what kind of extra steps you take in case that the input for an integer is from user input or from over the network or, you know, external.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I might have missed this in the actual talk, but do you guys also compare, when you're trying to do comparisons between two integer types that are of different widths?
So the first question is, what's the annotations look like?
Right.
Yeah.
More just kind of a detail on what extra care you take for user input.
Okay. So basically, what we in current implementation, all the annotations actually, most of the annotations are provided using an external input file. So input file looks like kmalloc 1. So that means the first parameter of kmalloc is a sensitive sink. So at this time, we're going to mark in the IR file, like say, OK, this annotation size is sensitive. So if any overflow result used in this kmalloc file, then we're going to report it. We're going to label it in the bug report. For untrusted sources, if it's a function like copy from user or something like that, also provide those annotations in a similar way, function name and the parameter index. But sometimes some functions basically not really functions, but macros. For example, get or something, it's a macro in the kernel header. So we had to modify the Linux headers, Linux kernel headers to replace it with a function call. That's the efforts. What's the second question?
Oh, the second question was, I might have missed this in the talk itself, but you guys also take care that when you're doing things like integer comparisons for different width integers.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Oh, that's only mentioned in the paper, right? I didn't mention in the talk. It's basically, the idea of that thing is basically sometimes there are signedness problems. For example, you want to say if x is smaller than 0, so of course you should use a signed integer for x. And sometimes people just use the wrong sign. They use unsigned for x. And the unsigned integer cannot be smaller than 0. So what we did was basically say we're trying to find some dead or stupid comparisons. And they should be sort of like, they're very likely to be bugs because programs don't, in general, write dead code. So we can talk this offline, like actually the details of how this works.
All right, thank you.
Hello, Christian Zamfir, EPFL, I'm over here. So I found it surprising that you went through the number of false positives really fast. So you had about 100,000 false positives for the whole kernel, and then you ranked them, and then it took 5 hours to go through 700 of these reports. And for instance, developers incorrectly fixed some of these bugs. So how did you actually figure out that they are false positives? It seems like it's not so easy, even for the developers themselves.
Okay, the question is, how do we actually determine like false positives here? So this is done in April, and it was a late night, and I was just tired. So I basically took a very quick look at those bugs. So basically, I don't know if they are actually false positives or not. So like I show here, we don't know. I basically look at those bugs that are very likely to be a real bug. And I know how to exploit them. So basically, I ran a virtual machine and tried to exploit it from user space. And if it could be done, then I probably think, OK, I report it to the Linux kernel developers. But for REST, it's very hard to know. We also tried this to OS kernel we wrote ourselves. And so we knew the code very well. And actually, it's still very hard to understand because the integer operations are so hard. And there are so many constraints across functions and module files. So we just don't know how to do this here. Yeah, that's one limitation.
OK,
yeah.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Luis Pedrosa from the University of Southern California. So you probably know this better than I do, but there is a lot of nasty code out there. And this will generate very difficult to solve constraints, or sometimes you have to simplify the model or something. When you have these situations where the solver cannot solve it, or you have to simplify the model for some reason, does your tool tend towards false positives or false negatives?
Okay, so the question is, how do we deal with timeouts, server timeouts? So we do it in two ways. And the first is, in the paper, you can find details of how we rewrite code. Because, for example, you know, if there's a division, And the solver is very bad at solving divisions. So basically, if you just write two lines of code, then the solver will time out. So in that case, our tool will done a bunch of smart transform rewriting and just transform those divisions to multiplication and a bunch of simplifications on the source IR. That's one thing we try to speed up the solver. And if the solver actually times out, so basically here we just mark it as timeouts, and here we to count it, we just include everything here, so we don't know because it times out. And for those CVE cases, nothing, no case times out. So for those CVE cases, it's really easy to count false positives. For the entire kernel, we don't count false positives here.
Thank you.